Cassie McCullough with you for Life Matters this morning, and plenty to think about there with that discussion we had just then with Matthew Evans. Now, we say that we hate the invasiveness of Facebook and Google, but despite plenty of efforts and scores of startups, anonymous social media has failed to take off. Way back in 2014, it was an exciting year for the idea of interacting online in privacy. Dozens of apps and platforms were launched and startups funded. But 2 years later, they're almost completely deserted and some have disappeared from app stores entirely. So why is that? If we're so keen on the idea of remaining untracked online, why haven't these been more successful? Tama Lever is a senior lecturer in internet studies at Curtin University, and he's joining us now. He's got up very early to speak to us. Good morning, Tama.
Morning, Cassie.
I always have a bit of a giggle to myself when I see internet studies. It's, you know, so sort of futuristic in a way, but it's not at all, is it?
It feels like it should be futuristic, but I think it's very much here to stay.
Now, these apps, describe how they worked or work. I think there's still a few limping around, but what was the idea?
So the idea was that you could use these apps and you could basically not have a permanent identifier attached to your name. So they might have been pseudonymous or entirely anonymous, and it would let you post media and it might be available to people within a specific, say, geographic region, say within a couple of Ks of what you're posting. That's how something like Yik Yak worked, or works rather. And it allowed you to have a platform to communicate, to share, that didn't get stuck and tied to your real name indefinitely. And I think there was a lot of appeal for this idea that we were having so much trouble with people having no play spaces, if you like, where they could say something online and it not be stuck to them forever, that there was a real interest in this idea of anonymous messaging of different sorts.
That is such an intriguing idea, isn't it? Because what would be the purpose of communicating then? It gives you a great freedom, but it also gives you the opportunity to be very nasty.
Absolutely, and I guess that's one of the real challenges that these platforms faced, and indeed their downfall for the most part, is that, yes, anonymity gives you the freedom to be, to explore, to play, to do different things, but equally it gives you the freedom to bully, to be horrible, and not feel like the consequences are the same as if you were saying it to someone's face. And I think that's where a lot of these apps fell down, is that they didn't necessarily have a plan on how to deal with that from day one. And not having a plan when you open a door like that means that you inevitably have to face a lot of public backlash when some very high profile cases of bullying take place. And if you don't have a way to deal with that from the day that you open the door, then I think it is something of a problem.
So some of these apps were called Whisper, Yik Yak, I think you already mentioned, Secret, Gossip with a U, Babbly, Cloak, is that how you say it?
I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those things that you don't say, you just look at, yeah.
Because Cloak is quite different to Cloak, isn't it? But so what were people doing with them? What were they actually discussing? Describe one or two of them for us.
Oh, so many of them were very very topical local discussions. So they were very popular around universities, for example, where you would see people, you know, they might have shared some colourful anecdotes about certain things, but often they were very useful. So people commenting on what they were doing, talking about day-to-day activities, talking about asking for specific advice. And you could get a thread, so you could get replies even if you weren't using a persistent identifier. Also, you got, you know, things that you might not necessarily say with your name attached. So at universities, inevitably you'd see threads complaining about the worst lectures you've ever been in and things like that. In the school ground, you would have seen the full range of sort of communication. And it is also true that you would have seen complaints and things that could edge into bullying fairly quickly.
So we've remember the work by John Ronson. That book came out a year or two ago called You Have Been Publicly Shamed, and it was about the way that people's lives can be destroyed in the public sphere, and the way that people stacks on, really, is what I think of it as. Everyone gangs up and really outs someone, often for really small slights. And there was the case of the Justine Sacco, who made a flippant comment about AIDS in Africa. I was thinking she was heading to Africa, and she said, "Oh, at least I'm white," making a joke.
Yeah.
Also, she thought, and her life was pretty much destroyed by the time her plane landed there. So that, I mean, that is the awful, awful side of not being anonymous, the fact that, it is a very, very public form of this. Why is it that this anonymity hasn't been more popular? Is it because it doesn't really appeal to our vanity, or is it that to be anonymous, you're really doing it out of a sense of social good? Or I can sort of see why it is. Or is it just that really the market model doesn't work because social media is based on collecting information that is then onsold to advertisers or whoever wants that information?
So all of that is true. It is very much the case that it's very hard to build a business model on the back of anonymous logins. And I think almost all of the, of the literally hundreds almost of anonymous startups that began, the only ones that persist today are the ones that have some sort of persistent identifiers now. So they've shifted to a model where even if it's not real names, there is a persistent sense of identity. And often we're talking about pseudonymity. So it's not necessarily being anonymous, as in no one can tell who you are, but that you have a persistent handle rather than a name. But it is also true, you can't really build a business model on anonymity. And the default business model, if you don't have one when you're a startup, is that you're going to sell advertising. And selling advertising requires you to have some sort of profile information on the people that you're selling to. That's why, Facebook is so very successful, is it's the best targeted advertising platform in the world. If you're a startup working on anonymity, how are you going to tell what is your value to potential advertisers? It's a very hard sell to think, why would you bother advertising there when you don't know that much about the people that you're selling to? The flip side as well is that I think people are very, very cynical about the idea that you can actually have anonymity. I think Whisper, for example, it was very clear after a little while that they were collecting information about you. It might not have had your real name attached to it, but they were building profiles in the background. And that's not really surprising, but I think in sort of a post WikiLeaks, post Edward Snowden sort of era where we know we're tracked and surveyed in so many ways, it seems almost unbelievable that these platforms could actually exist and not be building profiles in the background, even if they're not publicly available. So I do think people are very suspicious about anonymity.
Well, and they're also getting pretty clever about it too. And if you want to see innovation, it's usually with people who are aged about sort of 13 to 15, trying to avoid their parents' surveillance, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? You see young people learn to avoid surveillance of different kinds. So they're less worried about whether the platforms know who they are, and they're more worried about whether their parents and teachers and other people who they don't want to see their social interactions.
So how do they do it? How do they get around it?
It depends on the platform. And we see platforms are slowly, carefully, and not too publicly edging in ways that allow these spaces to build. So with Instagram, for example, which is a very public-facing platform, their new stories function has this really interesting privacy setting where you don't select who you do want to see a story, you select who you don't. So if you have your parents on your Instagram because, you've done the right thing and they can see your social interaction so that they can ensure you don't go off the beaten path too far, then you can selectively not show them something, which is seems like the only reason you'd have that function is to allow you to have play spaces where you don't let your parents see it.
I don't think it's just 13-year-olds and 15-year-olds who are worried about that.
Possibly not.
Could be many, many others. Now, Dharma Lever, you work particularly in this idea of surveillance and privacy, and one of the concerns of your work has been the way that we give away information about unborn children so easily. How do we do that?
Oh, look, this is very much an area where we see a lot of things happening. So everything from sort of sharing ultrasound photos on social media onwards. But we have sort of this cultural norm now where sharing and announcing things about our kids is presumed to be normal, which is, fair enough. It's an exciting thing when you see that first ultrasound picture or the first picture after your kids are born. But we often don't necessarily think through the privacy And we are building profiles for our kids that Facebook and every other platform is slowly building a profile on our kids from day one.
Ultrasounds can have the name of the mother and maybe even address or some sort of identifying figures.
Yeah, the metadata on the screen, if you like. And people do forget that just because it's in an image, that doesn't mean it can't be read by people, and it certainly doesn't mean it can't be read by machines. You're right, an ultrasound has often the mother's name, the projected date of birth, the facility that's doing the scan, all that sort of information visible on the screen. If you share that on Instagram, then even if it's not rendered as text in what, you know, other people are receiving, Instagram, which of course is owned by Facebook, can read that text and add it to the profile that it's building. So that there is a level there. But we also see growth in things like infant wearables, which are, you know, it seems ridiculous to say sort of Fitbit for babies, but it is that idea that you can buy, for example, a smart sock, which does that sort of, it measures heart rate and oxygen levels and things like that, which in some cases is really important, but these are not medical devices. These are devices that very carefully say, we're selling peace of mind. And if you're doing that, then you're getting parents into a place where they're imagining that surveillance is a culture of care. I'm doing the right thing by my child by surveying them. And if you're doing that from the day that they're born, then the idea that you're going to use different techniques to watch them very closely and in some, you know, in some ways of looking at it, stalking your own kids as they grow up, that's going to feel normal. That's going to feel like good parenting. And I think that's a point to step back and say, we're possibly doing something wrong here. If we're not giving kids any space to explore and be themselves, then it's going to be a really different sort of upbringing that they're going to experience.
Well, this is the tsunami that's coming for us with the Internet of Things, when every single object in the house will be connected. Tama, we've just scratched the surface, but thank you very much for talking with us this morning.
It's been my pleasure, Cassie.
That's Tama Lever. He's an academic in internet studies at Curtin University. He's got a whole body of work which you'll find fascinating. We'll put links to it on the program page of Life Matters, where you can check it out. Because, yeah, I mean, there's lots to be thinking about, especially if you have kids.